You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show. I'm Julie Burstein, in for Leonard Lopate today. The novelist David Markson has been hailed by critics and fellow writers as one of the greatest American postmodern novelists of his generation. Markson, who died in 2010, is considered by many as a writer's writer, and he's widely read within literary circles, but largely unknown to the rest of us because of the experimental nature of his work. If you have heard of him, you've probably heard of his novel, Wittgenstein's Mistress. It's about a woman who believes she is the only human left on Earth and who tells us everything she's thinking about, from ancient Greek history and plays to John Ruskin's butler telling him that the sun is setting, to how she set her son's room on fire. And she talks to us as months and years of solitude goes by. Markson is also known for a set of books he calls his tetralogy. It includes Reader's Block, This Is Not a Novel, Vanishing Point, and his final novel, aptly named The Last Novel. Today, for our segment Underappreciated, we're going to dive into Wittgenstein's Mistress. This is a book that David Foster Wallace called a work of genius. And we have two great tour guides on this journey, Françoise Payot-Papin, the author of This Is Not a Tragedy, the work of David Markson, and teacher of American literature at the University of Paris, and Anne Beattie, an award-winning short story writer and longtime friend and admirer of David Markson. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Anne, I wanted to start with you and to ask, how did you discover David Markson's work and this particular book?
I first met David Markson, I believe, in 1976 at a party at the Strand Bookstore, liked him, and I think we exchanged books at that time.
Aha. Uh-huh. And so it was a social meeting, and then you got to know him through his
yes,
work.
Yes, and then, of course, as with so many things in New York, it turned out that we knew people in common, certainly, but I had not read anything by David Markson at that point.
So when you read this book, what was it that you fell in love with? What is it that spoke to you?
Falling in love is a perfectly okay way to talk about it because, in a way, the book is really an enormous seduction.
Yes.
You know, as another writer, occasionally you read something that just comes so much from somewhere else that it really just blows you away. You think, you know, this isn't even any standard to aspire to. I mean, this just really has nothing to do with what I've been reading for most of my life. I think more than just falling in love with it or whatever, though, and I don't mean to say this kept me removed from the book, but there was a kind of writerly awe that anybody would dare be so uncompromising.
Mm. And you say it's a seduction, and I have to say I found it the same way, that within a couple of pages, the voice of this narrator, once you can give yourself over to it, it is like someone taking you by the hand and taking you on a journey, and you can't turn around and go back.
That's it. You feel like your body, you feel like your mind has been infiltrated. I mean, the book's like a brain worm. It's really quite astonishing. No matter how many times I go back to the book, I'm just as hypnotized.
One thing, though, about the book, and he's been called a postmodern, when you recommend it to friends who may not be... who may not have had a chance to read books like this, what do you say? How do you encourage them to open themselves up to this work that is so different from anything else you might have read?
I tell them that it's the most intense, really visceral rendition of loneliness that I've ever encountered.
And that's something that a lot of people want to stay away from. But
sure.
It also is something that is so powerful to experience through another person's life.
Well, I think that is the thing to say about this book, though, is that really it is almost a physical experience, and in a good way it is. I mean, these things are not always so easy to take, but the level at which, you know, it becomes your own book and the level at which you can personalize it from the kind of stepping stones and guides and allusions and accumulation of detail that Markson puts there is really almost immeasurable. It's really very, very hard to talk about. I know I sound like I'm talking in abstractions, but I really feel that Markson convinced me so much that I was in the head of that character that the world has never looked the same to me since.
Françoise, one of the things that captured me about the book was this sense of, and as Anne, you just said, this sense of loneliness, but by the middle of the book, I am convinced that this woman is entirely alone on the planet Earth. Is that something that that caught you also about this novel?
Oh, yeah, sure. And I'd like to emphasize the way this novel makes her so endearing in many ways. I mean, Anne's right. I mean, it's not an abstraction, sorry. She's very, she becomes your friend, and you feel for her in the way that anybody has felt lonely, even if only for 5 minutes. And she's there, and she has those routines we all have. I mean, she washes clothes. We said that everything she does is a bit odd, and she does it in an odd way, which makes her terribly vivid and endearing at the same time. I mean, there's humor in her loneliness. There's she recalls all kinds of love stories, even unhappy episodes of her life, and she becomes your friend as you move along. I mean, that's one thing that galls me when people say he's experimental. Marx is experimental as a way to sort of put him in a corner, but not at all in the sense that he's very endearing. His character stays on. She stays with you after you finished reading the book.
And she also has quite a sense of language and humor. And you say she washes her clothes. I remember a passage where she says, I had to wash a set of fresh underpants. And then she says, well, I wouldn't have washed fresh underpants. They wouldn't have been fresh until I'd washed them. So I can't, you know, there are always these sorts of, she'll say something and then she'll kind of say, no, that actually doesn't work. And it's very funny.
Oh, yeah, sure. And it's also, she's mad as a hatter because those considerations are completely silly when you're washing clothes. But at the same time, she's also a philosopher playing with, Wittgenstein's notions. But she doesn't bore you with those considerations. She only alludes to the funny things we have in language without realizing it. Sometimes our expressions are absurd. And she does this in a very lackadaisical and funny way, both because she's crazy and also because she's this funny, highbrow, crazy, and darling of a character at the same time, which is almost maddening, I mean, but funny.
And Anne, one of the things that this character does also is she drops in ideas from everywhere, from literature, from Greek history, she loves art, and she's always talking about art and music. Do you think we need to know all these allusions in order to follow her and be part of her stream of consciousness?
Well, first of all, not at all. I mean, most of the time, things are self-explanatory, everything, except maybe for the Wittgenstein bits and pieces, so as not to make it too complicated. But every time she mentions, let's say, Greek, ancient Greek literature, things will be very clear, even if we haven't, brushed up on our whatever, on the story of Helen of Troy and all those things. Well, they will be given in at the right moment so that we get the jokes. I had never read anything so encompassing. I mean, it's a very American novel, but it also embraces the whole of Western culture in a very, very, very clear and sometimes prosaic manner, and that I found fascinating as well.
This may sound a little crazy, but the thing that I kept thinking of was Moby Dick as I read it, was these sort of digressions into these worlds that you think, how did I get here? And suddenly you're in the middle of what whales are like. And this character does the same thing.
Oh, exactly. She does the same thing with especially Western art and literature. I mean, there's Don Quixote in there.
Yes.
And she's a mad Don Quixote woman, exactly as he was. So there's all the classics, but in a very, very playful manner, even when she's dealing with dark issues and death and pain. She brings this through the lens of all the classics in a way that you don't need to be sort of supremely cultured to understand this, because she gives it to you in very sort of winks on the side, but they're clear enough for, you know, I mean, it's not a graduate studies reading list. It's supremely playful, and the jokes are not highbrow. Anybody can get it, and there's the fun of playing along with her or trying to follow her mad logic from the bits and pieces we gather, and that's also good. I mean, you're right about Moby Dick. It's like encyclopedic, but toying with
yes.
culture.
Yes, right. It's playing with all of these
right.
ideas.
Exactly.
I am speaking with Françoise Payot-Papin and with Anne Beattie about the novel Wittgenstein's Mistress. And this is by the author David Markson. It's for the Leonard Lopate Show's series, Underappreciated. You're listening to the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. Anne, you knew David Markson. What was he like as a colleague and a friend?
He was a wonderful colleague and friend, certainly a standard that I could only aspire to. I do want to say, in terms of what we've been talking about also, though, that the humor, yes, is really something that is so affecting, and never humor in terms of being, you know, a simple joke decoded or something like that, but really very representative of the author's personality, because he had a very goofy streak. He really did. He liked practical jokes. He would say something profound and then have some undercutting remark himself, you know, conversationally, that would make you laugh aloud, whereas what he had said was very illuminating and so forth, but always not just to temper things for the sense of ease, but the fact that he was of two minds, and he realized there were certainly profound problems, but that also one was just a speck in the universe trying to solve these problems, and a kind of humility that is certainly rare among writers. Just to say one other thing, not directly about David Markson, but of course he could have cast this book any way, and I think not only of something like Moby Dick and the discursive sections there, but really how little is there as opposed to alluded to in something like T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland. Mm-hmm. I can't believe that he wouldn't have had that. Or, in fact, poetry in general as more of a model than, you know, something that was as fulsome as a very realistic novel or something like that.
I also thought about art, and instead of painting, I thought about weaving. I felt like I was following these bright threads that would dive under and then suddenly emerge again 30 or 40 pages later, but be changed. And so that there was this
yeah.
sense of all these different ideas being woven together, unexpected juxtapositions that, as you say, could take you into this profound direction and then make you laugh at
yeah.
the same time.
Yeah, very wonderful. And Kate, in the book, is a curator. I mean, this is, in point of fact, what a curator would do. The curator would, in effect, be guarding some collection of something. It would be looking at a repository of what it was from the civilization and knowing it in intense detail. And, of course, whenever we're that close to something, it's always very hard to figure out how to talk about it. Do we talk at the level at which we know it, or do we talk in a more simple way trying to explain it? And I think, too, the other aspect of the novel, Wittgenstein's Mistress, it's so interesting to me, is that whether or not you know David Markson personally, it's very clear to see that there is a mind in dialogue with itself, that it's very much a book that integrates the process of writing in what is being presented to you as the reader.
Françoise, I'll give you the last word. We have just a couple of seconds, but if someone falls in love with this book, what would be the next one you'd recommend?
Well, can I have a couple? Can it be a dual answer?
Sure, you've got about 15 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, go for the funny stuff that he wrote at the beginning, The Ballad of Dingus McGee, and then go to the last Reader's Block, just to get an idea of the scope of this writer, which is incredible. I mean, from extremely humorous to extremely profound and again, endearingly so in his later novels.
Well, I've been speaking with Françoise Payot-Papin and also with Anne Beattie about the writer David Markson and his book Wittgenstein's Mistress, and you can find that in the bookstores. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.